You can never underestimate the pippin' of the nigga messy. Oh, no. Come on, yeah. Forever Westside, California, man. You know what I'm saying? It's pimping on mine. I said a few words, we bent a few commas, and a bitch checked a few whole dollars. Dig that. Yeah, I wouldn't give a bitch a glass of water if she was choking on a peanut butter sandwich in hot desert, nigga. You understand me? You know why?
Cause I believe in pimping hoes. Yeah, you sexy thing.
Does anybody here know where Audrey at?
I don't know.
Probably down there again, sucking dick behind a laundromat. Mayday, mayday, earth calling ho. If you jealous of the pimpin', bitch, you need to let me know. Fake smile, fake laugh, fake walk, fake talk, fake mama, fake daddy. Is that why you mad at me? Do you believe I smash your ass? Then you believe I pass your ass. Girl, you mighty damn bold with that game you play. She touched a mattress to her back for the easy lay. You see, I learned the bitch. She was in the shower talking that shit, so I flushed the toilet and burnt the bitch.
It's not a problem that I can't fix, cause I can do it, pimping the bitch. And when I hit the whole stroke, when the Cadillac bumpin', smoking Robinson, drinking some trans, fix my gang.
Cause I believe in pimping hoes. Yeah, you sexy thing.
Hella drunk, and she on me, and all these bars keep pulling on me. All stuck over my tree. Mommy can't keep her hands off me.
What's up? What's up? You've been listening to Crimes and Reasons, Crimes and Treasons Radio, CITR 101.9 FM. We're almost out of here. Bike show is up next. Peace.
Eyes open, scoping the bunny hoppers. Big cheek bags, I like, whoa, I like that, you already know. I'm drunk on a hunt, trying to find me a friend. When I'm f***ed up, everything look like a 10. Baby got back, and yeah, I'm with that. I'm a player, my game sharp like a thumbtack. Baby's stirring up, but I keep pulling up. It ain't no slowing up, I'ma keep going tough. Girls say that the room is spinning, but wait, it gets better. It's just the beginning. Wait till you can't feel your hands and feet. This your first time rolling, you in for a treat. You wake up tomorrow thinking, what did you do? Why you at it? Don't stop, take one of these two, pop one.
Hella drunk, and she on me, and all these bars keep pulling on me. All stuck over my tree. Mommy can't keep her hands off me.
Leaned out, chasing my ends. All these keep chasing my friends. It's all good, I stayed through the lens. Kick back and just laugh while they chase on the bend. Till it's like Goldie, go hard or go hard. She ain't doing nothing, but she can leave me alone. Pretty thing walked up like, hey, what it is? She said she liked my shirt and she was looking at this. I said, this? Okay, this what it is. Just quit tucking on my neck and I'ma handle the biz. I reached in my pocket and I pulled out a grip. All kind of different colors and I told her, don't trip. First one's on me, all the rest on you. She said, I hit the ATM as best as you do. I led her through, skipped off, 5 minutes was back. Told me, give me everything, gave me a stack like that.
Hella drunk, and she on me, and all these bars keep pulling on me. All stuck over my tree. Mommy can't keep her hands off me.
Thank you. thinking I'm ready to go. Go! Because my heart starts thumping when my legs get too pumping. Gotta give me plenty of space. Hey, don't try me with your motor car.
The twilight shadows deepen in the night here. The city lights are gleaming all the snow. I sit alone beside the teary fire here. I'm dreaming dreams from out the long ago. I fancy it is springtime in the mountains. The flowers with their colors are aflame. And every day I hear you softly saying, I'll wait until the springtime comes again. When it's springtime in the Rockies, I am coming back to you. Little sweetheart of the mountains, with your bonny eyes of blue, once again I'll say I love you. While the birds sing all the day, when it's springtime in the Rockies, in the Rockies far away. I kept your image guarded in my heart here. I kept my love for you as pure as you. I'm longing for the time when I shall come near back to that dear old western home and you. I fancy it is springtime in the mountains. The maple leaves in first sighting appear. You'll hear me softly say, my queen of Maytime, this springtime I have come to meet you here. When it's springtime in the Rockies, I am coming back to you, little sweetheart on the mountain, with your bonny eyes of blue. Once again I'll say I love you, while the birds sing all the day. When it's springtime in the Rockies, in the Rockies, far away.
We're playing Oh, Happy Bird, Waltz by Joe Belmont, up on record. Thank you.
Welcome to the Pedal Revolutionary Show. You're listening to 101.9 FM CITR in the city of Vancouver, British Columbia. And the city is gorgeous today, so we played some songs that kind of reflect that. The first thing you heard was Springtime in the Rockies by Jack Turner, and that was followed up by Joe Belmont, who actually provided a lot of the bird song for Happy Bird's Waltz from 1906. It's an Edison cylinder. I apologize for its ratty condition, but I just thought it would be really kind of nice to hear a human rendition of what the birds all know very well. And we also heard Doc Clock and his Dreamland Orchestra with Sidewalk Blues from 1926. We're going to be talking today to someone who is always working very hard to make the city even more beautiful than it is already. One of the things she's busy doing is trying to help people stay off the sidewalks. She's a program director of the Vancouver Area Cycling Coalition's Commuter Cycling Skills Program. and she's also a chair of the City of Vancouver's Bicycle Advisory Committee. Her name is Bonnie Fenton. She's fantastic. You've probably seen her around. She does wear a number of different hats / helmets, and is again very active in the cycling community and rides her bike quite a bit. So she's going to be on the show here coming up in a minute. And in the meantime, I wanted to play another little song to get you in the mood to listen to the people around you and pay attention to the rules of the road. We have a classic from the Master Singers called Highway Code.
The Highway Code, Part 1. The road user on foot, walking alone, where there is a pavement or adequate footpath, use it. On a pavement or footpath, do not walk next to the curb with your back to the traffic. Do not step into the road without first looking. Where there is no adequate footpath, walk on the right of the road to face oncoming traffic. Do not loiter in the roadway or walk along cycle tracks. A marching body on the road should keep on the left-hand side. It should have lookouts at suitable distances at the front and rear. And at night they should carry lights, white at the front of the column and red at the rear. Always use subways, footbridges, pedestrian crossings or central refuges when provided. Otherwise, cross where you have a clear view of the road both ways. Take extra care if your view is limited by stationary vehicles or other obstructions. Before you cross, stop at the curb, look right, look left and right again. Do not cross until the road is clear. Then cross at right angles, keeping a careful lookout all the time. When you have stepped off the curb onto a zebra crossing, which must have black and white stripes, studs and lighted beacons, you'll have the right of way, but allow approaching vehicles ample time to give way, especially if the road is wet or icy. When crossing the road at junctions, look out for vehicles turning the corner. Do not cross the road, either at a zebra crossing or elsewhere, against a signal to stop by a police officer controlling traffic. Do not get on or off a bus or tram while it is moving, or when it is not at a recognized stopping place. Do not step out suddenly from behind a stationary or slowly moving bus or tram. If you want to get on one at a request stop, give a clear signal for it to stop, and do not step into the road until it has stopped. Prepared by the Ministry of Transport and Civil Aviation and the Central Office of Information.
And that was a little bit of information for you all. Again, that was the Master Singers with Highway Code. Wonderful. If you do a search on YouTube, you'll be able to actually see the lyrics. But wow, that was cool. I feel enlightened now. And speaking of enlightenment, I believe we have someone on the line with us. Bonnie, are you there?
Yes, I am.
How are you?
I'm well, thank you. How are you?
I'm good. Did you get to enjoy any of that with us?
I got to hear most of that. I learned something.
What did you learn? I guess there's always room for more knowledge, isn't there?
There's always room for something. Oh, I've just never heard it sung before.
So what did you pick up from that?
Well, I guess it wasn't anything specific. I just appreciate hearing things laid out like that.
Right. It's maybe a nice way of approaching movement on the road in that very kind of choral, relaxing.
It's gentle and it's friendly. Mm-hmm. I sing in a choir too, so I like that.
Oh, good. And it's also in harmony, which, you know, is a kind of an ideal for transport, I suppose.
Something else we should keep in mind.
I learned some new ways of pronunciating words. The recognize it, I liked that. And aviation was cool. So you're joining us, and we did give a little bit of a preamble so that people do know who you are if they haven't actually either met you in person, although I think probably a lot of people would recognize you from just seeing you on the bike routes, probably.
Or at least my name on a listserv.
It's true. Now, I wanted to talk to you a little bit about the VACC. For people that may not know, or people who may only know some of the story, let's talk a little bit about what the VACC is and how it came to be.
Okay, well, first of all, VACC, Vancouver Area Cycling Coalition, and the area means everything in Metro Vancouver. So some people think it's just Vancouver, but it's not. It's the whole region. And what we do, the three things basically that we do are advocacy, education, and promotion of cycling as a means of transportation.
Now, how do you guys keep in touch? I know probably a lot of you are based in Vancouver, but as you say, it is all of the other regions as well. So how do you coordinate with them?
Well, we've got, that's the coalition part. We have groups that are based in different municipalities. So we have, for example, we've got a Vancouver committee that's great and that's really active, but we also have committees in the Tri-Cities, so Port Moody, Port Coquitlam, and Coquitlam, in New Westminster, in Surrey, in Burnaby, on the North Shore, and in Delta.
Mm-hmm.
So those are all groups that are working with their own sort of local issues and local problems and talking to their own city halls, and then we gather together as a coalition to deal with issues that are region-wide.
Mm-hmm. And then I guess you guys get together every once in a while and trade. Do you spend time a lot doing that through internet communication, or do you also spend some time seeing each other face-to-face regularly?
Well, it's interesting. We kind of joke sometimes because we spend so much time really on our computers and doing stuff like that we're not actually out on our bikes as much as we'd like to be, which is a little bit sad, but that's the way it is. So it's a lot of internet communication and kind of the non-sexy things like writing letters and making phone calls to politicians and city staff and talking about what's coming up and what's on the roads and how we can make it better and safer for cycling.
Well, Bonnie, here on the Pedal Revolutionary Show, we think that's very sexy behavior. We're actually we're trying to promote that as something that is definitely a quotient of hotness.
Yeah, well, and that's true, too. I should say that I would love to encourage people to do that as well, because the one thing that people don't realize, I think, is that you really can make a difference just by making a phone call or sending an email or writing a letter to City Hall, to your city councilors. It makes a difference. They count those. They read them. They know what people say. So if there are a lot of voices saying, we want better cycling facilities, they listen.
Mm-hmm. And I remember back when there was a poll put out by, I believe, it was part of the Civil City initiative by Sam Sullivan, and part of it was this survey of city of people in the city. And I remember there being a lot of activity on the Velolove mailing list. And as a result, people actually went to fill that out. And, you know, I think part of the reason was that people were a bit annoyed that there was a lot of attention paid to cyclists not wearing helmets being a threat to kind of a civil society. But at the same time, there was absolutely no question that was geared towards dangerous driving. Driving recklessness or inattention.
No, and in fact, I remember that cycling without a helmet, I think, came on the list right below public defecation.
When really it's a greater threat than public defecation. It's far more common. Well, and what I thought was interesting was then in the results of that survey, you know, even though there hadn't been a question that was specifically asking people about that, there was certainly a response from the community saying, you know what, these other issues where you can fill in the blank, these are other issues, and driving was put as one of them. So
exactly, and that's where you can bring that up. And more people are bringing that up, too, as an issue, that it's not just one or the other. And I think that's it, too, because nothing is one or the other. It's always the interaction between them. And the thing that I usually like to point out to people, too, is that most people are not only a cyclist or only a driver or only a pedestrian. It's all people who are doing those different activities at different times. So it's just to remember what's going on for the other people who are doing the other activities when you're doing one or the other.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just how you treat. And I like to say that it's people who are doing the activities as opposed to labeling people by their activities.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a nice idea. Yeah. People are people kind of thing.
Just as long as you remember that it is people that you're dealing with, whatever activity they're involved in at the time.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that cyclists maybe have a greater awareness of the interdependence of road users?
I think so. And it's interesting. I was talking to another cyclist just the other day, and we were commenting on these other friends of ours who were they're slightly worried about us because we're on our bikes, because they're not riding bikes, and they're sort of concerned about us. And, they say, well, ride safely. And we were kind of laughing, saying, well, it sounds as if they don't realize that we're taking our life in our hands if we don't.
Mm.
So you do have, that's how close it is to the heart, basically. When you're on your bike, you have to know what's going on because you are taking your life in your hands. You're out there with vehicle traffic, but you're relatively fragile sitting on your bike, so you have to be aware.
Mm-hmm. And maybe, I wonder if, so you were talking to a cyclist, you mean a human who rides a bicycle sometimes, but anyway.
That's exactly what I mean, another person who is riding a bike.
Thank and you. I wonder people who walk, pedestrians, if it's a bit easier to kind of, for all of us to forget that actually that is in many ways just as risky an activity because it's something that we all do and we're all very, very, I don't know, I wonder if it kind of blends into the background a little bit, but really
they're
just as exposed as we, as anybody.
And because you're so small, and I think sort of that relative size of you in or on the vehicle that you're using. When you're in a car, you're pretty big. You've got that whole vehicle around you. On your bike, you're smaller, but still there's something. And when you're just you standing there by yourself, you're a lot less visible. So just in those terms, I think you have to be a little more careful for yourself because people might not see you as easily.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the one thing that pedestrians do have in their favor for the most part is that there's dedicated space for them. Like there's a sidewalk, and that's intended for people who are walking or at the time that they're walking, except, of course, when you're crossing a street, and then that's when things become dodgy. But it's that interesting thing of there's space that's for cars and there's spaces for pedestrians, and then we've got the bikes that are sort of not quite sure where they should be sometimes. And
amphibious.
Depending how confident you are, you may be right out there with the cars, or you might feel that you'd rather be on the sidewalk, but that's not a legal thing to do.
Mm-hmm. And I wanted to ask you just to go back to about talking about other cities in Metro Vancouver. How common are the issues amongst all of these cities, and what are some of the issues that are kind of strikingly common and some of the ones that are maybe unique to each area?
Actually, all in all, I'd say they're pretty different because you're dealing with different systems in each city, and it's amazing how they are different, how things are divided up into whoever does things, if it's engineering or planning or a sustainability office that does things in a different city, and so they divide up their work differently, or whether they're more focused on development or whether they're more focused on public space or... So it's really different, and then of course you take, the obvious example is Surrey as this sprawling, spread-out municipality.
Mm-hmm.
And they actually do some really good things that they do, in fact, build bike lanes with all new roads that they're building, but it's just such a sprawling place and relatively unfriendly for bikes that you don't see the good things that are happening out there.
Mm-hmm.
And you look at the North Shore or the Tri-Cities where there are a lot of hills to deal with. And so you're thinking about where do you want to put a bike facility that's anybody's going to want to use anyway because you're going straight up a mountainside. So those are different things that people deal with, too. And the busyness of traffic in some areas. Vancouver, because it's relatively dense compared to other areas and not so much highway-oriented, it's a lot easier to put in bike lanes, so in the residential streets. But in other places, you don't necessarily have that, or things are a lot wider and faster moving, and so it's not as friendly for bike facilities.
Can I ask a dumb question? Why is it easier to put bike lanes into residential streets?
Well, then they're not bike lanes. They're just, all they do is put in some traffic calming. So it slows the cars down, so it's a friendly pace. It's not a scary speed to be interacting with bikes.
Mm-hmm.
So, in fact, it's not putting in the lanes.
Mm-hmm.
It's just sharing the space by traffic calming. So if I picture Coquitlam, for example, and some of the residential streets there, they're pretty fast-moving, even those.
Mm-hmm.
So you would just deal with them differently. You really do need to have spaces dedicated for bikes, as in a bike lane, because you just don't feel safe when you're sharing the lane, when you're sharing space with somebody that's moving 60 kilometers an hour or 70 or something.
Right, like something like Broadway. Why do you think also it's maybe from a political perspective, from a politician's perspective, looking at these ideas, or even you know, an urban planner, that to have a bike route on a residential street means that everybody is going to be very supportive of that, whether it's the people on that street or not, whether they're actually cyclists or not, that even the car drivers who live on that street are like, oh, great, my kids can actually play on this street now. Or whereas it can become a bit hairier when you want to get into, you know, taking a street that is, you know, for drivers maybe a bit easier to deal with because there are less, in their mind, variables or less irregularities.
Right. I think actually the people that complain more are likely the ones who live on the streets parallel to the potential bike route. Because if something is being built as a bike route and there's traffic calming being added, then probably that street is going to be quieter. And so immediately somebody says, well, where are those cars going to go? They're going to be on my street next. So, which is another interesting question, too, whether the cars actually do just immediately move over. And there are whole theories about disappearing traffic and whether it actually, if it flows like water and it never reduces but just goes into the next sort of most accessible route, or whether some traffic actually disappears. And studies have shown that if you do make it more difficult to cross in some areas, then people will make other choices and they won't necessarily just insist on driving their car but in the parallel streets. So it's been demonstrated that if you do provide other alternatives for people, they'll use them.
So when you guys all get together, then I guess what you talk about is how do we effectively make ourselves better advocates? Is that something that all the townships have in common?
Yeah, it's interesting because it's like advocacy is not an obvious thing either. And if anybody's interested in finding out more about it, we've got some really good information on the VACC website.
Which is?
www.vacc.bc.ca. And I think you can just click on advocacy, and there are just some basic how-to tips, as in how do you find somebody at City Hall to talk to, or who do you talk to, or where do you even start with something, or how do you write a letter to the editor, or how do you write a letter to a politician, and just some really basic stuff that you don't necessarily, it's not intuitive knowledge, but the things that make you more effective in presenting your case. So whether you want to talk to politicians or staff, or if you want to make something a really big deal, or if it's easier to try and work quietly under the table and deal with people differently. So it's part of it is just, yeah, advocacy and how do you do it. And a lot of it, like so many things in life, is about building relationships. So you take the time, you spend the time that it takes to get to know people, and so you can talk to engineers or planners or politicians at City Hall. And for the VACC, for example, we've been doing it for 10 years now, and we got to the point where most city halls are very happy to listen to what we have to say, and they often ask for our advice about anything that's happening with cycling because they know that we have the experience and we have the connections to people who are out there using the facilities to know what's probably a good idea and what might not be such a good idea.
That's awesome.
Yeah, no, it really is, and that's why, and here's my pitch for membership, too. That I would encourage anybody to become a member of the VACC, and this is all part of the same thing. So if we can say that we're speaking for 1,000 cyclists, then that's a lot better than saying, well, we've got 200 people that we're speaking for. So it's all part of creating that coalition and speaking with a common voice. And that same thing goes for if somebody's got an issue that they think is really important and needs to be dealt with, then come to one of the local VACC meetings and bring it forward. And I'm not saying that we're going to do the work for you, but we'll certainly support you in doing that and take that forward as a VACC issue to the local municipality. You've got a lot better chance of something happening when you're working as a coalition and a group of supportive people, again, with some background in advocacy, than if you're just trying to do it by yourself, because a single voice often just isn't heard.
And there may be other people out there who also, you know, are feeling like that's an issue that they want to get involved
with. Exactly, and suddenly you find you're not alone anymore. Other people are thinking the same thing and going, who knew? We're all out here suffering through the same damn whatever it is and not realizing that other people feel the same way. So there's definitely power in numbers.
And it's interesting, too, to look at the history of you know, bicycle advocacy and you know, going all the way back to, for example, and it probably precedes this, but going back to the League of American Wheelmen, where people were able to effectively make sure that there were safe and convenient and pleasurable road surfaces upon which to ride bicycles. Of course, that was co-opted 20 years later, but...
I know, I was going to say, well, the irony of that was in the early 1900s, and the League of American Wheelmen, or bicyclists as they're called now, were the reason that roads were built in the first place, and they were then taken over by cars. So we got paved roads for bikes.
We're trendsetters. Now, how do people become a member of the VACC? What's the procedure?
It's pretty easy. You can go on our website, and right now it's download a form, but actually next week we're going to have our brand shiny new push a button and pay for it online, so people can do it a lot more easily that way. Mm-hmm. Or if you pick up one of our newsletters or a brochure, and then you can just fill in the form then, and it's basically it's $20 a year for a membership, mm-hmm. and that doesn't mean that you have to do work. You can if you want to, but it just means that you're putting your support behind the thousands, I mean literally thousands of hours of volunteer advocacy work that goes into making cycling better in the Lower Mainland.
Is that how VACC is funded? From memberships?
One of the things, okay. We don't have a lot of money, mm-hmm. and I'll come back to the other stuff we're doing too. That was just the advocacy part. But so we've got, from our memberships, which is not enough right now. We are really pushing just because, as I said, it's important, and there's so much good work going on that people should support it. So membership is one of the main things, donations, a few small grants here and there. Mm-hmm. But for our advocacy, really most of it is done by volunteers, which is incredible. The two things that we do have money for, and that's money that we fundraise specifically for the programs, are the one that I run, which is the Commuter Cycling Skills Program. Mm-hmm. And most of the funding from that comes from TransLink. Mm-hmm. And as well, we've got a little bit from the City of Vancouver and also some amazing support from Bikes on the Drive, who are they're telling people that they have to join the VACC and that they have to take our Commuter Cycling Skills course because it's a great thing, which I completely appreciate. And so that's the Commuter Cycling Skills course, which is a one-day course that people can take to learn to ride their bike safely and confidently in traffic. So if you ever hear anybody say, I really love to do it, but I'm scared, mm-hmm. then this is the answer. It really is. It's one day, and people walk away at the end of it saying, I can't believe what I just did. This is so great. And they use words like empowered, mm-hmm. which is so amazing. So that's what you can get out of taking these courses for a day, and it's a classroom and it's parking lot, so practicing skills on your bike, and then we go out on the road and you get to like hands-on do the stuff that you learn in the classroom, and it's not all intuitive. So you may think, so there, I'd say there's people that are scared, and then there are people that say, oh, I know everything I need to know, I learned to ride a bike when I was 5. And to those people I would say there are probably still a few tips that you could learn, and not everything is intuitive, and mm-hmm. and they could walk away learning something too, with definitely.
So then who's the program designed for? Is it just for people who are kind of not too confident riding in traffic, or is there another appeal as well?
It's usually those ones that say, I'm scared, or even, I don't know, the bike routes, or, lacking skills, lacking confidence, too, is a big thing. Some people say, I just don't have the confidence to ride my bike. Mm-hmm. So skills or confidence, those are the two things, because mm-hmm. Knowledge really is power. If we say, for example, you're allowed to be out there on the road. You have a right to take space in the lane. And people say, wow, I can do that. Oh, I can't do that. And by the end of their 2 hours on a ride, they go, I can't believe I did that. So, we teach them that riding in the gutter is not a safe place to ride. Or people say, well, I know it's really dangerous when you're riding next to car doors. You have to be really careful when you ride there. And my answer to them is, don't ride there.
Yeah.
Because if it's a place where a car door is going to open on you, you don't want to be there.
That's right. You
need to move out and take more space on the road, and that makes you visible then, too. So, again, you're safer because people can see you there, and you're not popping in and out from between the cars, but you're there and you're consistent. And so those are the kind of things that you learn. And so it's a confidence-building thing as well as the skills that you learn.
And you're right. There is a lot of pressure, I think, for people to feel like they need to be over as far as possible next, in the gutter, riding as a gutter bunny, which makes you really susceptible to all sorts of
if anything happens, you have no escape route. You're stuck in the gutter and you got nowhere to go because there's a curb right next to you or whatever it is, and you're stuck. So that's why you always need to leave yourself that bit of escape room if you need it. So if you've got, and we always say a meter, if you've got a meter anyway between you and the gutter, then if something happens, you have a meter to move into.
3 feet for our American friends. Now, is that kind of the biggest mistake that you find that cyclists typically make?
That's probably And it's not even a mistake so much as it's a fear thing, and people don't think that they should be out there in a place where they're visible and have that escape room. So that probably is one of the biggest ones, I would say.
Mm-hmm. And can you just, for people who might not know, maybe just go over a little bit what the law is regarding taking the lane?
Yeah, basically, you the law says that you're supposed to ride as far to the right as practicable.
Ooh. That's tantalizing.
I leave you to define the word, but basically, you want to be, you don't need to be in the middle of the road if you don't need to be there. You take mm-hmm. as much space as your safety requires. Mm-hmm. So, if there are car doors or if there's a gutter, then you need to be a meter away from those, and that's how much you take. If the lane is really narrow and you can see that it really would be dangerous for somebody to try and share a lane and pass you, then you take the middle of the lane and just stay there until it's wide enough that you think that there is space for somebody to get past you.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing that's really helpful is using signals. And a lot of people don't do it, but it's brilliant just to use a turn signal or a stop signal when you're going to. And I can oftentimes I can just hear the car behind me sort of slowing down, going, oh, okay, they're going to get out of my way in a minute. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, it's that sort of they can tell that you're being a responsible cyclist and you're telling them what you're doing. You're communicating with the person behind you.
Mm-hmm.
And somehow that's calming to people, that it's like, okay, I can see what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're just nicer.
It's like when a cat and a dog meet and they figure out, oh, okay, we have some things in common.
This is when we come back to the people thing, I guess, that we are both people and we're just in different kinds of vehicles.
Now, I met you when you were wonderful enough to teach a little workshop on cycling advocacy at the Bicycle Bee quite some time ago. And I wanted to ask you if you want to just give a couple of numbers. I know for people riding who maybe see that the right-hand side is too dangerous to ride, either because of potholes or there might be some glass that needs to be cleaned up, or there might be this and that, what do they do? Where should they phone?
You can call. If you're in the city of Vancouver, they do have, they've got what they call the bicycle hotline.
Ooh.
And, they got their very own phone number. And
can you lay it on us?
Pardon?
Can you lay it on us, or should we tell people to do a Google search? Because we can do that.
They may have to do a Google search, okay. But you know what I was going to say? If we want to address the entire region, again, I'm going to send you back to the VACC's website.
Mm-hmm.
But you can just go into the VACC website, and we've got an entire page that has the bicycle contact person for every single municipality in the GVRD, Metro Vancouver.
Bonnie, you do?
Secret information. It's all there.
Okay, you heard it, everybody. Get clicking. That's vacc.bc.ca. Tell them what you think. And if you want to find more information about the bike skills, you can go vacc.bc.ca/bike skills.
Bike skills.
Right?
And what people should know if they're on the UBC campus is we have a class this very Saturday coming up at UBC, and we still have a couple of spaces open. So people want to register for that, and it's at UBC, there you go.
Yeah, so what should they do?
They, again, want to go to that same place, vacc.vc.ca/bike skills.
Yeah.
And there's registration right there. You'll just see the dates and locations and click on that. There's a class at UBC. Registration is right there on the site. And that's really all there is to it.
And you guys are going to be doing these regularly now.
Yes.
How many? You have a lot of classes upcoming.
We've got about, coming up between now and the end of September or October, we're going to have about 50 classes. And I think there are 25 maybe or so listed on the website right now. Again, all over Metro Vancouver. We've got Vancouver and the North Shore and Burnaby and New Westminster and Coquitlam and Port Moody and Richmond and Delta, I think. So,
wow. What are the what's required of the instructors to teach these classes?
The instructors are all CanBike 2 certified, which is a 20-plus hour course.
Mm-hmm.
And they also do training specific to our program. And when we hired them, part of the interview process, what we required of them was two things, was their cycling skills and their teaching skills, empathy, that sort of understanding what it's like for people to do things that are scary.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the people that teach the courses are fabulous. I can't say enough good things about our instructors.
Mm-hmm.
And they're completely empathetic, and they're really normal people. And if anybody's thinking about riding a bike and they think they have to wear spandex, I'm here to tell you don't. Anybody can ride a bike wearing anything they want to, although we do require you come in respectable shoes for this and not flip-flops or something for our classes. But there you go.
And I've seen some footage of you guys doing a class, and it's so cute. I guess you loan them those little yellow vests.
Yeah, everybody's got the shiny yellow vests on for the class.
It's so cute.
So, awesome. Yeah, one of the instructors said he feels like he's got his little ducklings behind him.
And it is very friendly. Like, it's a really... I also noticed something on the VACC website that you actually have the ability to teach adults how to learn how to ride a bike.
Yes, we do.
Which I think is really, really great.
I've
had a couple of friends who, as adults, never had the opportunity to learn, and then they're stuck because they feel like, well, everybody knows how to ride, and...
Well, and then you're embarrassed. Mm-hmm. And people are. But it's funny because when we started doing these, and I was getting phone calls from people saying... So do you teach me how to ride a bike? Like, I'm really sorry, this class is for people who know how, but it's improving skills and mm-hmm. confidence. But I got enough of those calls that we said, well, we have to do something about this. And so we started last year. And so we don't do a lot of them, but there are people that call in. So it's a one-on-one, and you start with the basics, and we take the pedals off and lower the seats and go through some sort of step-by-step to give people the confidence and work on balance until they can do it.
That's awesome.
Isn't it?
Where do you teach them?
Well, that we do in different places, and because it's one-on-one, it's pretty casual. We set up, what we do for this is we have two-hour sessions a week apart, and it's one-on-one with one of our instructors. Mm-hmm. So we choose a location that's convenient for the instructor and the student, and obviously it needs to be away from traffic and mm-hmm. in a quiet place, and usually want a little bit of a gentle slope. So there are some sort of things that we look for in choosing a location, but it can be anywhere that's convenient for the person taking it.
Mm-hmm. I think this is... I was just really happy because actually somebody asked me as well about 4 months ago, and I didn't know where to send them. And I thought, oh, I should know where to send people.
Well, I know. That's because there's not anywhere. There wasn't until we started doing it, so I'm thrilled that we can.
Mm-hmm. What things are you conscious of when you're talking to non-cyclists or to new cyclists? What do you think is really important for people who are already kind of into it to be sensitive about?
Do you know what's so amazing is the things that people don't know? It's just incredible. You can give them a really basic piece of information, mm-hmm. and it's like eye-opening, exciting stuff for them. Mm-hmm. And even start with, for example, when you start with your bike, you want to have your starting pedal in the what you call the 10 o'clock or the 2 o'clock position.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got to push, and you're pushing downward to start.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a revelation for some people because they start with their foot, their pedal at the bottom, and then try and give a little push off with the other foot and get going. And of course, you wobble.
Yeah.
And so some of the stuff that's just really basic, and you're mm-hmm. going, wow. So this is exciting information for somebody.
Wow. That's
and some
really
people
super.
Even say, well, how do I get on my bike? What's the mm-hmm. best way to do that?
Mm-hmm.
So you start with just absolute basic stuff, and it's all exciting news.
Wonderful. So if people want to know also about those learning to ride a bike courses, they can also, again, look at that website. One thing I wanted to ask you about, too, was the Bike to Work Week.
Yes.
I want to know how it got started. And that was a project of the VACC, is that right?
Yes, it was. And it was something that was going on in Victoria for the past few years. And we did a pilot for that on the North Shore about 3 years ago. And it was great, but it wasn't big enough. We needed to do something region-wide because some people, of course, live in North Vancouver and work in Vancouver and Burnaby. And so that didn't work, and it really had to be big and be region-wide. And so we have this wonderful woman that came here last year who had worked in Victoria before and said, I want to do this. And so Mia is her name, got started, and we had our first Metro Vancouver-wide Bike to Work Week last year, and it was just a smashing success.
Hmm.
And thousands of people came out, and of those, there were 900 who said they were new, as in they didn't ride their bikes to work before, and here they were doing it now. So that was 900 people in the week. They were doing it for the first time, which is stunning.
Mm-hmm.
And now the response, even this year, they're all coming back saying, when are we getting started? What's going on? Can we do this? And they all want to participate again, and we're figuring we're probably going to double our numbers. So I think we had 3,000 or 3,500 people, I think, registered last year
mm-hmm.
in our very first year at it. And it's just fun because it's fun workplace competition, so you can compete with other workplaces that are of a similar size or doing similar things to you and trying to get more kilometers or getting more people participating. And one of the great things they offer, too, is a one-hour workshop. So you can just say, we want to have somebody from the VACC come and give us a one-hour workshop, and it's information on Bike to Work Week itself and also some really basic safety tips and tips on clothing and dressing and packing your things and panniers or backpacks or whatever you use, just to give you some sort of basic information to get you going. And all of this, I mean, because all the things we do together. It's the advocacy, the education, and promotion. It all combines to overcome barriers because it's all barriers to cycling, and this is another way. So it's encouraging people and supporting them. And we have these what we call commuter stations along the way at various places, mornings and afternoons, during bike to work week. So it could be somewhere along the way. Well, the Lionsgate Bridge is one of the great ones. So there's a tent set up, and we've got bagels, and we've got coffee, and we're hanging out there in the morning.
So there's material reward in it for people that are participating.
Oh, yeah. Food.
Yeah. Fuel, I think it's actually called.
Well, same thing, yeah.
Well, that's really, so I guess it sounds to me like a large part of the purpose is to get people to kind of dip their toe in the water. And
yeah.
Do you have any figures on, you know, people that participate that week, if they continue?
We do have some follow-up numbers on that, and actually it's amazing the numbers that have, and I can't give you concrete ones, but I can say, for example, just out of the commuter cycling skills course, I do a six-month and a one-year follow-up on that, and we've had, I think, in the six-month follow-up, I said, well, you know, how often are the people that answered, how is it? The people who said they never cycled to work before they took the course, and that was 60%, and then the same people, they said, that never cycled to work 6 months after the course and a year also as well, was cut in half.
Wow.
So that number's dropped by half just by giving people that basic information they need to to get out there and be confident.
And I wonder, too, I think that the route is, what route people can take to get to work is really part of, a big part of the intimidation. During Bike to Work Week, how do people actually get to find out what a good route is to go to work?
Well, there are a couple of ways. One of those great things is if we do the workshops at the workplaces, we talk about route planning. So if anybody's doing this from their workplace, a great thing to do is get one of the TransLink bike route maps, and you can get them at most bike shops, and they cost about $4. And you take one of those to your workplace or wherever it is that your destination is, put one up on the wall, and just say, people put in pins. Where are you coming from? And then you can find somebody that you can ride along with. Or this, at least the map will show you some of the better ways to go on a bike as opposed to in a car. And it's interesting because we had, I think, at one of our Burnaby commuter stations last year, and this fellow came up and he said, I need one of those maps. He said, I just rode my bike down down Boundary Road in Hastings.
That's
you
how
need
he
a map.
Because
that's just what he'd done in his car. He had no idea that he just went straight down that same route. And you don't need to do that because it's not even pleasant.
Well, you can kind of make it like a video game. I mean, if you're a traffic rider, but certainly.
Well, that's the thing. You can tell. If you see somebody riding on Broadway, for example, you know if they want to be there or not.
Or if
you
they
can
don't
just tell by looking at them.
It's true. If you can get around to their face. what do you want to say to all the bosses in Metro Vancouver?
Well, there's another one. That this is a great thing in so many ways for building the morale of employees, and actually you've got a stronger and a better workforce because people are healthy and they're awake when they come into the office, and it's not because it's coffee-induced, but because they actually have fresh air in their lungs when they walk into the office.
And they have stories to tell, and they're excited. And
and they are. And it builds camaraderie, too, because you're having these conversations with people. If you see somebody else that's come in with a helmet, and you can say, well, where'd you come from? Isn't that cool? And didn't you enjoy that nice day? And because everybody, there's always somebody that says, what a great day for a bike ride. And so my answer, of course, is always, it's always a great day for a bike ride. But it really, in studies, in fact, have demonstrated that people are healthier for doing this. And they're happier, healthier, and more productive, basically. So it's a win-win situation without even getting into the idea of parking. And if an employer is paying for employee parking, then I'd say probably your cyclists are your best friends because they're not taking up nearly as much space as somebody who wants a space for a car.
Yeah, that's right. And I know you're a fan of public bike programs,
yeah.
Is that right? And would that, I guess, support citywide initiatives?
Definitely it would in a few different ways, and I think basically as much as anything it would raise awareness. It would put bikes out there in front of people. So if they don't necessarily have one, or if theirs has got two flat tires and sitting in the basement, then they're not apt to pump those tires up necessarily. But if there's one sitting right there on the street, they might think, I wonder if I could do this. I'm just going a few blocks. Maybe I'll take the bike. So it sort of puts it right there in front of people as a possibility. So, yeah, and I think a feasibility study has been done. I think it's just completed now by somebody working for TransLink, and I think it's been positive.
That reminds me, too, as far as transportation, integration, things like that. If mm-hmm. if people are integrating during bike to work week by using a bicycle and by using some other kind of transportation, maybe mm-hmm. they live really far from their workplace.
Yeah.
Is that still okay? Is that still within the realm of bike to work?
Absolutely. Work yeah, no, that still counts, too. It's a bike and something else. You're totally within your rights to do that. And even if you want to take your bike partway on your car and then park your car somewhere and ride the rest of the way, that's totally mm-hmm. fair, too. Because I think with so many things, you sort of people get the idea that it's all or nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not. You have a choice every time you walk out your front door of mm-hmm. what mode you're going to take, and you decide whether it's appropriate to walk or to ride your bike or to take the bus or to take a car, and any one of those are valid options depending on where you're going.
You're like a Lipizzaner of horses. Thank you so much for taking time with us today. I don't know all of what that means, but I have a feeling it's probably on the money.
I'm hoping it's positive.
It's absolutely positive. You really seem to have a sense of really good ways and really practical ways to move forward for, you know, bringing bike ascendancy to its rightful place, as well as getting, you know, having real strategies for people to feel like they can get involved at any part.
Absolutely. And just to get involved in some way. So it really, I'd just like to come back to that. You can make a difference. You definitely can.
Well, wonderful. Well, listen, Bonnie, thank you so much for joining us today. Again, everybody, we've given the website a million times, but Vancouver Area Cycling Coalition, when's your next meeting, Bonnie?
Well, that depends where you are, but those are all listed on the website, too.
Okay.
For each of the municipalities, we have
wonderful.
The meeting dates listed there.
Wonderful. Have a wonderful day and enjoy your ride home.
Thank you so much.
Okay, thanks, Bonnie.
Bye-bye.
We're going to listen to a song to take us out, and it's a weird song. It's a strange song. It's called Do You Got Skills? It's by MC Chairman Plow, and it's part in Cantonese, Teochew, and Mandarin. You got to listen to it to know what I'm talking about. Everybody have a great couple weeks. We'll see you. This is Pedal Revolutionary, CITR, and stay tuned for some awesome garage music.
虽然你个口系攞个啰柚柚，做个打飞机机师搵咗几多钱？你不如同你个拖友开铺头卖啰柚，做得好唔使 用口用手，可以开分店，可以做出口，发到猪头。你认第一六七，冇人敢认第七。其实细侄，小心啲说话诱惑。